Welcome to Columbus Perspective, a weekly public affairs presentation of The Fan. I'm Kate Burdett. It's Women's History Month, and today I'm chatting with the Executive Director of Dress for Success Columbus about how that organization provides women with tools for success through workforce readiness and employment retention programs. I'll also speak with a local pastor who is bringing back a phrase from the past in an effort to keep Columbus kids safe. Plus state politics with Doug Petcash of Face the State. This week, Doug interviews Secretary of State Frank LaRose, one of the Republican candidates hoping to run for election to the U.S. Senate seat currently held by Democrat Sherrod Brown. First up on Columbus Perspective, at Dress for Success Columbus, they say it's not only about the clothes, but that's where it starts. And we're going to get into that with their executive director. The executive director of Dress for Success Columbus, Habiba Bankston, joins me on Columbus Perspective. Welcome, Habiba.
Well, thank you so much for the opportunity to join you. I'm really excited about this.
Me too. For those who are not aware, can you explain what Dress for Success Columbus is?
So Dress for Success Columbus is a workforce development organization that is committed to empowering women to achieve economic independence. And we do that in a variety of ways. We provide career resources and tools. We, of course, provide professional attire to support women as they prepare for interviews, starting new jobs, or honestly, just looking for a style refresh that'll allow them to step into their workspace confidently and authentically. And in addition to that, we provide a network of support to help women thrive both in work and in life.
Well, that sounds like a tall order to fill. How do you, first of all, get the clothing that you use for dressing people for success?
All of the inventory that we have at Dress for Success, from our clothing items to our shoes, accessories, purses, the list kind of goes on from there. It's all 100% donated to the organization. So there are a number of generous individuals across the community who come to us on a weekly basis to drop off clothing items that they no longer need. We definitely prefer them to be gently used, sometimes brand new. But in addition to individuals in the community that donate clothing items, we also have a number of corporate retail partnerships like Lane Bryant, Victoria's Secret, Express. The list kind of goes on from there that generously donate items from their brands to support the work of Dress for Success Columbus and to help us in serving the women that come through our doors.
And those women coming through the door, how are they connected with the services of Dress for Success Columbus?
So we have a number of partnerships with many other community organizations. Last year, specifically, you know, we partnered with over 125 community organizations that included community shelters, other nonprofit organizations, educational institutions, medical institutions, churches, other workforce development agencies, and so many more that connect women that they are serving, that they're seeing within their organizations. You know, they refer them to Dress for Success Columbus. But in addition to our community partnerships, any woman across the community who may be preparing for an interview, who may be, starting a new job, or, you know, she finds herself in need of guidance, coaching, support in her professional journey, she can pick up the phone and call Dress for Success Columbus to schedule an appointment directly. So I think for many years, people believed that you had to be referred to the organization. That's just one way to get connected, but you can also reach out to us directly for the support that you may need.
Now, that's great to know. And in addition to the styling and the kind of helping someone get that interview outfit together, it doesn't stop there. Once you help a woman get into a new job, there are groups and mentoring and other opportunities within Dress for Success Columbus for her to continue to be successful, right?
The clothing and the professional attire that we provide is definitely core to our work, to our brand, and who we are. But that's usually just the pathway, the entry point into the services and the work of Dress for Success. We do have a full suite of workforce development programs that we provide, that really follows women along their career journey. So we're not just stopping at helping you get that job, but we're really providing that support and those tools along the journey to make sure that, she is sustaining her work and she's also having the opportunities to advance in her career. So as you mentioned, we have a professional coaching program, which is completely free of charge. We will connect a woman in the community to a vetted HR professional who has many years of experience that can provide that one-on-one coaching if she's preparing for an interview or she's trying to position herself for a raise, hoping to gain that language that will prepare her to have those conversations within the workplace, which can sometimes be incredibly challenging, intimidating, that a lot of women need support on. So we do have that coaching program. We also have our women to women mentoring program. So we typically pair about 20 of the women that we serve with 20 professionals across the community just to help in building bonds amongst women. There's so much that we can learn from one another and from our journeys, both personal and professional. So that is another program that we have available to women here in the community. In addition to that, we have our professional women's group, which is really a training ground, or at least that's what we like to refer to it as. It gives us an opportunity to tackle different topics connected to personal development, professional development, as well as career advancement. So any woman has the ability to drop in, to participate, and to gain the tools and resources that will help her along her career journey. In addition to that, we also have our Mobile Career Center, which I like to refer to as our mission in motion. Part of the beauty of Dress for Success Columbus is being able to experience our boutique, where the magic happens, where we see women transformed through the attire that they're provided, or also through some of the programming that we provide. But we also recognize that, some women are dealing with, barriers to transportation, struggling with the ability to come to us. So we have developed a mobile unit that allows us to go across the community directly to different neighborhoods, directly to partnering organizations like Impact Community Action, the YWCA Family Center, where we can bring our services directly to, those who are absolutely most in need. So it's the size of a semi truck. People have probably seen it rolling around the city of Columbus many times before, but it is lined like a full boutique, equipped with dressing rooms and all of the professional attire that anybody would need. But in addition to providing the clothes, we also have on-site career coaching. There have been plenty of times where we've seen a woman who's currently maybe living in the shelter and she's preparing for a job interview. She was able to hop onto our mobile unit, get professional attire, and also some quick coaching tools that she could take immediately into an interview. And I'm so proud to say that, just last year, we saw the reach of our impact with the average wage of the women we served increased by 13.5%. So that's $16.02 in 2022, and that increased to $18.19 in 2023. So when we talk about impact, that is the impact that Dress for Success Columbus is making.
On average, how many women would you say you serve in a year's time?
Last year, we provided over 2,200 units of service were provided across all Dress for Success programs. But if we're specifically talking about, even the professional attire that we're providing for interviews, for employment, we outfitted over 1,200 women last year.
Wow. Habiba Bankston is the executive director of Dress for Success Columbus. They provide women with the tools for success through workforce readiness and employment retention programs. And told us earlier that a lot of the clothing in their boutique that is available to women who need a good outfit for an interview or for the workplace, all of that is donated. And much of it is donated by people in the community like you and me. So as you're doing your spring cleaning, as you're cleaning out the closet and doing that purge, Look at the gently used items that you have and consider donation to Dress for Success Columbus. Habiba, are there specific items that Dress for Success Columbus is really in need of in the boutique?
We are constantly in need of so many different items. I think the largest and quickest need is always shoes, purses, accessories. But one thing that we are also noticing a strong need for is toiletry items. So when we talk about our mobile career center, which goes to, you know, areas and organizations within the community that are of most need, you know, we're not just providing her with the clothes and tools that she needs for the workforce, but also some of those basic needs like toothpaste, like toothbrushes, shampoo, those small toiletry items that can go a long way for some of our, the women who are of most need. But in addition to that, we're seeing a strong need for more maternity clothes. We also have a men's inspired section within our boutique because we're really working to become more inclusive and providing greater variety in the clothing that we're providing. But honestly, all forms of clothing is needed, but shoes, purses, accessories, and toiletry items continue to be a great need for us.
The Dress for Success Columbus Boutique is in the Short North at the corner of High Street and Fifth Avenue. Be sure to check their website if you do want to make a donation. They have specific schedules and hours for when they accept donations, but I can speak from experience and tell you they accept them gratefully, and you can get the documentation for tax purposes if you need to. Go to dfscmh.org to get all of that information. Habiba, with all of the wonderful programming you're referring to within the Dress for Success universe, as I guess we'll say, I would imagine there might be a need for volunteers as well.
We are constantly in need of volunteers. We have a staff of 8 full-time working professionals at Dress for Success, including myself. And I mean, when I mentioned the number of women that we served just last year, you know, our team could not do that alone. We have volunteers who are in our Dress for Success boutique Monday through Friday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m. So we honestly need volunteers around the clock to help us in serving and supporting the women who come through our doors. So if you have interest in being a personal stylist to help in dressing the women who are in need of professional attire, that is definitely a need. If you have interest in being a professional coach or being a mentor or maybe even facilitating, you know, a workforce development topic, we need all of that support. But in addition to, you know, executing the programs, we also need volunteer support when it comes to serving on the committees that really help in driving and creating the work of Dress for Success Columbus. And we have a variety of committees for individuals who might be interested in supporting to join, from finance to marketing to events to fundraising and development. And the list kind of goes on from there. But, you know, when I think about our donation days, which are every Monday and Friday from 10 a.m. to 4 p.m., we also need volunteers who are willing to support us in our warehouse and accepting donations, greeting our donors who are making these generous contributions and helping us in sorting and managing through all the inventory that we receive, which could be a lot for such a small team. So the volunteer support that we get in that regard is incredibly helpful. You know, just last year, we had over 400 volunteers support the work of Dress for Success. So when we talk about the need, hopefully that kind of paints a very clear picture of just how much support we need.
It's Women's History Month. Perhaps you're thinking, what can I do? What can I do to give back to my community, specifically to support other women in my community? What a great opportunity to do that. Go to dfscmh.org for all of the information on the various volunteer opportunities at Dress for Success Columbus. Executive Director Habiba Bankston, you are a wealth of knowledge. Was there anything that we didn't touch on that you wanted to make sure to mention?
With it being Women's History Month, there is so much that we have from a programming and event standpoint that we would love to welcome the community to join us for. There are two events that immediately come to mind, which really will give people an opportunity to come see the Dress for Success boutique in person, to take a tour, to really get a sense of what the experience is like. And that event is our Toast and Tour, and that will be on March 13th from 4:30 to 7 p.m. at our boutique at the corner of 5th and High. The exact address is 1204 North High Street. And of course, there's more information on our website. In addition to that, we are hosting a volunteer informational coming up on March 23rd from 10 a.m. to 11:30 a.m. And again, a great opportunity for you to meet the Dress for Success team, to see our boutique, to have an opportunity to meet some of our clients, and also to learn more about the work of our organization and how you can get involved in the best way that you can. So again, more information at our website. Those are two of the events that we're going to be hosting for the rest of the month, but we do have a full calendar of other events as well.
Habiba Bankston, thank you so much for your time today and all of the information that you've shared with us about Dress for Success Columbus.
Thank you so much for the opportunity. And I'm just grateful to be able to share more about the incredible and transformational work of this organization. And thank you again.
Crispy, faded, lit, baked, toasty, stoned, blazed, zooted.
When you're high, there are a lot of ways to say it. But there's only one thing you need to remember. Driving under the influence of marijuana is illegal everywhere. If you feel different, you drive different. Brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
Teachers are dynamic leaders, shaping a new generation. They bring a variety of perspectives from diverse backgrounds, innovating how they teach to prepare students for our fast-changing world. Achieving this takes skill and expertise. They're tireless explorers, creatively discovering a universe of solutions, telling stories, experimenting, inspiring, mentoring, connecting cultures, and connecting with each other. Leading by example. Experience the unique joy of helping students thrive. Teaching is a journey that shapes lives. Are you ready to begin? Explore teaching at teach.org, a campaign supported by the U.S. Department of Education, teach.org, and 1 million teachers of color.
Over the past few years, the COVID-19 pandemic has affected how we live our daily lives. Today, we also face a mental health pandemic that threatens our well-being as we attempt to rebuild our social networks and communities.
The pandemic has reminded us to value family, community, and our human connections. However, it has also left many of us feeling more isolated, confused, and alone, struggling to find meaning amid loss and uncertainty.
Today, 1 in 5 Americans experience emotional and mental health challenges. But many of us do not understand what we are facing or know how to ask for help.
At the American Psychiatric Association Foundation, we understand what you are going through, and we are here to help. Our vision is to build a mentally healthy nation for all. We work every day to eliminate stigma, combat mental illness and substance use disorders, and advance mental health. If you or someone you love needs help, you are not alone. Please visit mentallyhealthynation.org to learn more.
This is Columbus Perspective on The Fan. I'm Kate Burdett, joined today by Dr. C. Dexter Wise III. He is a Columbus pastor who also has taken on a new responsibility, if you will. Some may remember back in the day when television stations would end their broadcast day with the message, "It's 11 p.m. Do you know where your children are?" Well, Dr. Wise decided that was probably a good idea based on current events. Dr. Wise, thank you so much for being with us here on Columbus Perspective today.
Thanks for having me, Kate.
Now, I understand you are not originally from Columbus. You grew up in the Baltimore, Maryland area, right?
Yes, Baltimore is where I grew up, and that's where I call home.
Okay. And so for Columbus purposes, when did you come here and what brought you here?
It's interesting because I just said I call Baltimore home, but I've actually lived in Columbus longer than I've lived anywhere in my life. I've been living in Columbus for 41 years. And when I left Baltimore, I was 19. So there you go. I came here to be the pastor of Shiloh Baptist Church in 1982. And we founded our current church, Faith Ministries, in 1991. And so I've been in this community for more than 40 years.
And you're not just in the community, you are working constantly to improve the community. What was the impetus for your decision to embark upon the Do You Know Where Your Children Are initiative?
Well, I've been engaged with, interested in, and active in trying to work with the youth really throughout my whole career. But what was the impetus of this particular project is you may recall that back in the fall, October, November, a young man went missing. His name was Imperial Stewart. His mother and family were on television every night for several days, pleading for information about his whereabouts. Turns out he was finally found, and it was true that he was murdered instead of just missing. Apparently, he told his mother that he was going to go buy some tennis shoes, and well, it really wasn't shoes. It was guns and so forth that were involved. It went bad, and he ended up murdered. Just like you and thousands of other people, I watched that news report and kind of shook my head. Oh, it's terrible. It's just a shame what's happening to our young people. Until I got a call which informed me that I had personally baptized Imperial and his mother on the same day several years ago. I did not remember it, nor did I remember them. But that brought to my consciousness a conviction that we have a lot of young people who are missing in many ways, and we don't remember them, we don't see them. And by the time we do, it's almost too late. So when I did his funeral at our church, there were several hundred young people there, teenagers and so forth, grieving and what have you. And I'm saying to myself, what can I do? What can I do to help with this problem? And at the time of the funeral, I had no idea. But it came to me that when I was a teenager in Baltimore, every night on WJZ TV Channel 13 and other stations, just before the news came on, an announcer would come on and say, it's 11 o'clock. Do you know where your children are? And I haven't heard that for years. I think that it still is active and practiced in some places around the country, but nowhere I've been for the last 30 or 40 years. And so I took it upon myself under the inspiration of the Spirit of the Lord to just challenge radio stations, television stations, media outlets to, at 11 o'clock, all of us as a community to just pause and ask the question, do you know where your children are? It's an old time thing. It's simple. And yet it's something that probably could be revised. I'm finding out that many of the things that are beginning to work best now are old things that are brought back. They're new to this generation, but they're old, tried and true things. And so you are a part of the manifestation of that, allowing me to share this with your audience. So we want to get radio and television stations to do this because typically we have instituted the Amber Alert, which is a great thing. But the Amber Alert, usually by the time that alert is sounded, it's almost too late. And it's only in case of an emergency. So what I'm suggesting is let us as a community, every platform we have, billboards, radio, television, bus signs, whatever it is, at 11 o'clock, let's all stop and say, do you know where your children are?
It seems so simple, but as you've said before, Dr. Wise, many children are hiding in plain sight, and you point in some ways to all of the digital computer online activity. What do you think is the biggest reason? Is that it? Is it the social media and the readily available resources online that kids have access to that may be leading to some of these tragic outcomes?
Now, you mentioned something that I think makes this campaign different than the one I grew up with. And that is that particular question was aimed at parents. It actually said parents It's 11 o'clock. Do you know where your children are? Well, I'm dropping the parents, not because the parents are not important, but because this issue is larger than parent-child. It's a child community, because all of these children belong to us. And so we should ask the question, do we know where our children, and our doesn't just mean the ones that we gave birth to, but the ones that are in our community. And so therefore, we want to know, number one, it's not just parents, but it's us. And then secondly, we're not just asking the question, do we know where they are physically? Because as I say, they may be looking right at us, but they may still be missing in so many other areas. So do we know where they are academically? Do we know where they are spiritually or emotionally? Do we know where they are health-wise? Do we know where they are socially? All of these aspects of our children can lead to them becoming lost physically. And it could be, or it does have something to do with their access to technology. We can have them, we can say our child is upstairs in the bedroom. Well, they may be upstairs in the bedroom under the covers communicating with somebody in Japan. So we have to know where they are, who they're talking to, where they're going. Do they really go where they say they're going? All of this. And we don't want to become, you know, CIA, but we do want to have some kind of grip on how to communicate with our children so that we can find them. Here's the phrase that I use. We want to locate them. We want to lift them. We want to lead them before we lose them.
And that's powerful phrasing, I think. What do you say when there's pushback from people who are more focused internally and say, I take care of my family. Everybody else needs to take care of their own. They don't necessarily subscribe to the it takes a village theory of child rearing. How do you respond to that?
Well, the problem is that it does take a village, and nobody can take care of their families 100%. You send your child off to school in the morning, and that child stands on a bus stop exposed to the public. They get on a bus driven by a bus driver. After they get out of there, then they go to the school where they're taught by school teachers. We literally turn our children over into the hands, sometimes of strangers and sometimes of people we thought we knew but did not know. And so you can say you take care of your child, but you only have your eyes on your child for a certain amount of time. And so it takes all of us working together to be able to make this happen. I can imagine there are people who say, it's none of your business where my child is, but it's my business if your child is stealing my Kia. That's my business. Mm-hmm. So that's why we're making a community-wide effort. Even though there may be pushback, I'm pushing the other direction. Let's have some accountability, not just with parents, but with pastors and politicians and business leaders and owners, the neighbors down the street, all of these things it's going to take to be able to make this community what it should be.
Dr. C. Dexter Wise III is the pastor of Faith Ministries Church in Columbus. He's undertaken a campaign to get people talking, to get people looking out for children in their community, not just their own kids. It's 11 o'clock. Do you know where your children are? We've all heard the phrase. He wants to bring it back. Dr. Wise, tell me, since you introduced this initiative, what has the response been like?
It's blown me away. It's really blown me away. The first thing is I've come across so many people who've never heard it. And I can't imagine people, that just lets me know how old I am. But to think that people have never heard the phrase, that's amazing. And then the ones who have heard it, they say, ah, they get an aha moment. Mm. And then thirdly, we've been speaking to several media people, radio station owners and so forth. And as soon as they heard it, it caught on with them. And so I really have been surprised and overwhelmed and blessed at the response that it has had, because it's something that people can do that can make a difference. It's not something you have to go out and think about. It's not something you have to go out and buy something. It's a very small thing within their sphere of influence that they can do. And it only takes 5 seconds a night to do. I went back and looked at some of the stories that have been written, broadcast over young people who've been killed or murdered or robbing cars and all of that, stealing cars. And the amount of seconds total that have been spent in describing the crimes that these young people have committed is nothing compared to 5 seconds a night that could be used to prevent those crimes. So I'm leaning heavily on the prevention side. Let's get together, find out children. Let's get together and have a holistic approach to missing children, not just physically missing, not just those in sex trafficking, and those are serious problems, but they're missing in so many other ways. The majority of our missing children are not on the side of a milk carton. They're sitting across the table from us as we eat dinner. And so we've got to investigate that. We've got to put some emphasis on that so that we can get our arms around our children and the things that they're facing long before it becomes too late.
Dr. Wise, is there anything else that you wanted to add before we finish up?
I do want to add that if there are persons who are have access to media, persons who have social media, because we have ads, we have posts that can be put on social media. So if you are not a media mogul, but you just have a Facebook account or a YouTube channel, we are asking you to go to our website, which is doyouknowwhereyourchildrenare.com. doyouknowwhereyourchildrenare.com. And then go to the contact section. Let us know who you are. We'll send you information how you can be a part of this campaign. Also, we're looking for sponsors, for people who will donate to help us spread the word, because while there are radio and television stations which are going to give us public service announcements, a lot of what we're trying to do will have to be paid for. So we need money to do that. So you don't have to own BNS or 97.1 The Fan. You can just own your own website and we can help you help us spread the word. It's 11 o'clock. Do you know where your children are?
Raising that big question and sparking conversations. Dr. C. Dexter Wise III, thank you so much for being a part of Columbus Perspective today, and best of luck to you.
Thanks, Kate.
I'm Shanola Hampton. Every day, millions of people face hunger. Today, I will share with you some of their experiences. I'm stuck between paying for medications or paying for food. John from Maine. After paying my bills, I can buy groceries. It's sad to say, food comes last. Alice from Oregon. I thought pantries were for less fortunate people, but anybody could be less fortunate in a day or even a second. Claire from Virginia. The Feeding America Network of Food Banks helps provide over 6 billion meals to people in need each year. No one should have to worry where their next meal will come from. Together, we can end hunger. Learn more at feedingamerica.org.
My muscles ached. I was tired all the time.
My son had a full-blown asthma attack. It came out of nowhere.
The unsettling thing about some symptoms is
I had a fever and these terrible headaches.
You don't always know what's causing them.
It was Lyme disease from a tick bite.
I had Zika virus from a mosquito.
He had a reaction to cockroach allergens.
Threats to your health can come from unexpected places. Get the facts. Visit pestrol.org. A public service message from the National Pest Management Association.
This is Columbus Perspective on The Fan. Now, courtesy of our sister station, WBNS 10 TV, here's Doug Petcash from his Sunday morning public affairs program, Face the State. A new edition can be seen this morning at 11:30 on 10 TV.
Just about 50,000 Ohioans have already voted in the March presidential primary, either by absentee ballot or in person at Board of Elections offices. Also, according to the Secretary of State's office, more than 115,000 have requested an absentee ballot. Keep in mind, there are roughly 8 million registered voters in Ohio. Besides president, the top race on every party ballot across the state is the race for one of Ohio's U.S. Senate seats. On Democratic ballots, Senator Sherrod Brown is running for his 4th fourth term representing Ohio. He is unopposed in the Democratic primary. On Republican ballots, three candidates are vying to be the one to challenge Brown in the November general election. The very high-profile race pits State Senator Matt Dolan, Secretary of State Frank LaRose, and businessman Bernie Moreno against each other for the Republican nomination. I wanted to delve deeper into their stances on some of the key issues in the state, the country, and the world. So I invited all of them to discuss their positions and ideas here on Face the State. Last week, State Senator Dolan joined me. You can watch that interview on TV.com. I've also reached out to the Moreno campaign and am waiting to hear back. Today, my guest is Secretary of State Frank LaRose. He is serving his second term as Secretary of State. Before serving as Secretary, LaRose served two terms in the state Senate. He is also a U.S. Army Green Beret and is currently serving in the Army Reserves. Secretary LaRose, thank you very much. Welcome to the show today.
Thank you, Doug.
Let's get right to it. Let's talk about some domestic policy issues. We see it a lot in the news. We see it a lot in the political ads. And we're talking about border security at the southern border. As a U.S. senator, what would you do to secure the southern border?
Yeah, first of all, this is where I speak from experience. Every candidate goes down there and they pose for a photo op or a field trip at the border. For me, this is something that I lived as a soldier. I served on the U.S.-Mexican border as part of a counter-narcotics task force. That was 24 years ago. What we saw was a disaster then. It's a full-scale invasion now. I've laid out a very clear plan for what really should be done immediately. The president could do this if he had the courage to do it, I would argue. And it's three military divisions on the border. That's not an extreme idea. Again, I was in uniform on the border 24 years ago, under the Clinton administration, actually.
And but what would their role be?
Well, their role would be to secure the border, right? We're called the Department of Defense for a reason. And, you know, stopping a foreign invasion from occurring, which is really effectively what's happening down there when you look at the massive humanity that's coming across the border. Three military divisions can secure a 2,000-mile land border. They don't need to be down there long. It's an 8-month or a 12-month deployment until the wall is built. And we also need to make it clear that you won't benefit from coming here. That means if you've come to our country illegally, you'll be deported. If you're already here illegally, you should be deported. And there's no access to government benefits of any kind, or you face a lifelong ban on citizenship if you come to this country. I've also been clear that we need to declare the cartels as foreign terrorist organizations. They are bringing fentanyl into this country that's killing 200 people a day. And this is where I've differed from my opponents. They've said, well, it's irresponsible to say we'd use the military. Listen, if Mexico's not willing or able to work with us, then we absolutely must be willing to use both lethal force and financial sanctions to go after the cartels.
Doesn't that create some pretty big diplomatic issues, though, if you're having to go across the border to take on the cartels?
It can potentially, but listen, the role of the federal government is to protect the lives of Americans. 200 people a day is like a fully loaded passenger plane crashing every day. If that was happening, we would ground all the aircraft until we figured out what was happening. Here, we don't need to figure it out. We know what's happening. It's precursor chemicals from China, and Biden has refused to hold Xi accountable for that. In fact, he just took his word for it in California when they met a couple months ago. Those chemicals are coming to Mexico, being concocted by the cartels, and smuggled across the border. When I was on the border, we would search people coming across the border carrying precious children, and we would find that they had put bags of cocaine into their diapers, thinking we wouldn't look there, right? What a terrible thing for someone to do. Today, it's not cocaine, it's fentanyl, and it's deadly in tiny doses. Sheriff Jones, the Butler County sheriff who's endorsed me, had a traffic stop just a couple months ago. They found enough fentanyl on I-75 in the trunk of a car to kill 1.5 million people. We must use force to stop that from happening.
Do you support any level of amnesty?
No, absolutely not. In fact, what happens when you encourage amnesty is it encourages bad behavior, particularly right now with the asylum process. The reason asylum exists is because you're in jeopardy in your home country. But if you have passed through three or four relatively safe countries, then are you really seeking asylum, or are you just trying to abuse the system to get into our country?
We'll go to another huge issue, of course, much discussion about abortion across the country and here in Ohio. You are pro-life. I believe you've said that you would support a federal limit on access to abortion. What would that limit be in your plan?
Well, what I've been clear about is that there should be federal standards. And this is something that doesn't get negotiated here in this context. It gets negotiated among 100 senators, among representatives, and brought to the floor. This is something that I think that the states are working on in many cases in different directions. You've seen what happened in Ohio and in other states. But we should have a minimum standard. We as a country are not a people that should be the most liberal in the world. I mean, right now, what is allowed to happen is late-term abortion. That's something that even most pro-choice Americans think goes too far. And so, yeah, we should have a conversation about this. It should be thoughtful. But I'm not going to say these exceptions or this many number of weeks. I'm for doing what we can do to protect life in this country. And that's something that 'll be worked out on the floor of the U.S. Senate.
So you don't support the 6 weeks being the limit for abortion.
Again, what I'm for is what we can do to protect life. As a practical matter, I don't think that has any chance of passage. And so let's talk about what's practical and let's find a solution that we can agree on that affirms life and, move forward on this issue in the best way that we can and stop letting the extremes kind of dictate the terms.
You would be representing, obviously, the people of Ohio. They voted rather resoundingly in November, 57% to 43% to legalize abortion here in the state. When you're thinking about representing the people of Ohio and this issue, how much is that in your mind about what the people want?
Well, even the context of your question, you said they voted to legalize. Abortion was never fully made illegal in Ohio. It was just a certain number of weeks or exceptions or whatever else. I was asked on a radio interview just days after the November issue passed. The host said, well, it's evident by this that a majority of Ohioans support some access to abortion. And I said, yeah, you're right. It is evident that a majority of Ohioans support some access to abortion. But what was passed in Ohio is not some access to abortion. What it really is the most extreme pro-abortion law in the country. I don't think that's consistent with Ohio's values. I think we should have a continuing conversation about this, about, making sure that we have something that Ohioans can agree on.
The Alabama Supreme Court recently ruled that frozen embryos are human beings. Where do you stand on that issue and how it relates to couples having access to in vitro fertilization access?
Well, first, let me start with a very clear statement. I am pro-life and I am pro-IVF, and these things are not contradictory ideas to one another. In fact, it's concerning that in some cases there has been a bit of fear-mongering about this, saying, well, people are trying to ban IVF. I know of no one who's trying to ban IVF, certainly not my fellow Republicans. I can't speak for the other two candidates, but I've heard them express support for the treatment as well. We need to affirm families. We need to make it such that people that need fertility treatment, that need IVF, know that that is available to them, and no one's trying to take that away from them. We need to be a society that helps people to form families, because a strong country starts with strong families. We all come from one, and so we need to be able to help people to do that. But like any medical treatment, IVF can be done ethically or unethically. I think that it's a smart thing that the state of Alabama is now working to address what really is probably an unintended consequence of their law, to make sure that in Alabama and in other places, people know that they will continue to have access to IVF. Of course, it needs to be done in an ethical way, though.
The economy is always a big issue, of course. What do you see as the biggest threat to the economy?
I think that the biggest threat to our economy is government overreach in many cases, right? The secret sauce to American prosperity, from my read of history, has always been hardworking people, great natural resources, and the freedom to make the first two work together to create prosperity. One of the things that we're lacking right now is the freedom to truly engage in that free market economy that has been the engine of human prosperity in this country since our founding. That means that we need to cut taxes. We need to streamline regulations. Doug, some of the worst things that happen in the federal government don't happen on the House floor or the Senate floor, but on the 20th floor of some federal office building, where a bureaucrat, unaccountable bureaucrat, is dreaming up rules and regulations for people to follow. We need to rein that in and really take a machete to the bureaucratic state that considers itself almost a fourth branch of government. We need to do oil and gas drilling. We need to be energy dominant as a nation. Those are the things that we need to focus on.
We see it right here in Central Ohio, of course. High cost of living, high mortgage interest rates,
yes.
High cost of housing, inflation.
Yeah.
What can you do about it?
Well, this is a question I got from a reporter a couple of weeks ago. Why do you say the economy's bad? Look at these economic statistics. According to the BLS.
Unemployment's 3.7%.
Yeah. Well, but here's the thing. This reporter said, you know, the economy's doing pretty good. My question is, for who? Maybe if you live off a stock portfolio or if you live off of a trust fund. But for those of us that earn a living, that earn an hourly wage, a salary, everything costs more, but wages have not been going up to keep up with that. The solution to this is getting government out of the way and actually doing free market policies. Now, again, the Biden administration thinks that you can spend trillions of dollars on green energy subsidies, but call it the Inflation Reduction Act, and it's going to reduce inflation. It's government spending that throws gas on the fire. And meanwhile, Biden's playing firefighter and arsonist at the same time. He's causing inflation, but then the Federal Reserve Bank is continuing to raise interest rates, which are also creating this vicious cycle that caused it to be hard to buy a home now.
We're seeing fantastic growth in the area, of course, with Intel, Google, mm-hmm. Facebook. What can you as a senator do to ensure that the growth can continue, but the towns and cities can handle it?
Yeah. Well, I served as the transportation chairman in the state Senate, and I think that one aspect of that is to focus on transportation policy, and I mean investing in roads and bridges and the infrastructure that we actually need to grow our economy. But the growth that we're seeing here in Ohio is also a testament to the fact that when you cut taxes and streamline regulations and, yes, engage in smart economic development to attract businesses to come here, that it can really make a difference. We also need to focus on making sure that people know that Ohio is a great place to live, work, and raise a family. Low cost of living, high quality of life. We need to continue to invest in that quality of life, including our schools and our local communities. These small towns in Ohio have so much unrealized potential. It's just a great opportunity to take some of these small towns and turn them into a true live, work, and play community.
And the challenge is going to be keeping the cost of living manageable.
Absolutely. And that's always a challenge, right? I mean, and part of that means that we need to, at the state level, continue to look at all the different levels of taxation. Right now, property taxes are really hurting people. It's because of inflation and that automatic adjustment that happens with inflation. But the state legislature needs to take a look at this to make sure that the growth in property taxes is kept under control, especially for those on a fixed income. There are a lot of seniors right now really struggling with the massive increases in property taxes.
I know that you're a Second Amendment supporter. We had another high-profile mass shooting at the Kansas City Chiefs Super Bowl celebration. But we're also seeing gun violence in the Columbus area and throughout the state. What can you do to cut down on gun violence with our kids and other people dying in the state?
We have a societal problem. We have people that attempt to do conflict resolution via firearm. We have people that don't take seriously what it means to discharge a firearm. As somebody that's carried a gun for a living since I was 18 years old, I know full well how dangerous these implements can be. But I also know that disarming law-abiding people is not the answer. And this is where there's a real contrast between me and the other two people running. They both have spent a lot of money trying to convince people that they're conservatives. Ohioans aren't buying it because they see their past record. I have consistently stood to protect the Second Amendment. I have a 100% pro-gun voting record, and I've been endorsed by Buckeye Firearms, where you see my opponent, Mr. Moreno in particular, recorded a video just 3 years ago where he was mocking gun owners, where he was talking about confiscating firearms from people. That's not a conservative position. The Second Amendment exists not just for the enjoyment of shooting sports or for hunting, but because armed people are free and a disarmed people are not.
But how do you stop the violence?
Yeah, mental health treatment, youth mentorship. We need to get really focused on who are the people that are engaging in this kind of violence. And it's not about the implement necessarily. It's about the motive and what causes people to feel so desperate in their lives, so disconnected from society that they want to engage in this kind of thing. That's the deeper problem that needs to be solved here.
Columbus Perspective is a public affairs presentation of WBNS Radio. The opinions expressed on this program are those of its guests and do not necessarily reflect those of WBNS Radio, its staff, management, or sponsors.
President Biden just gave his third State of the Union address. He boasted about a strong economy and repeatedly warned about threats to democracy. The Verify team was watching closely to fact-check the claims in his speech, as well as in the Republican rebuttal from Senator Katie Britt. First, on the economy.
Inflation has dropped from 9% to 3%, the lowest in the world.
It's true that inflation peaked at 9% in June of 2022 and has since fallen to 3%. That is lower than in much of the world. For instance, in the UK, inflation remains above 4%. But his claim that it's the lowest in the world is false. Several countries have lower inflation rates. For example, Canada's is below 3%. Biden also talked about the domestic threat to democracy posed by the January 6th attacks and the foreign threat posed by Russia and Vladimir Putin. In both cases, the president took aim at former President Donald Trump.
Former Republican president tells Putin, quote, do whatever the hell you want.
That's true. Last month, in a campaign rally, Trump claimed that when he was president, the leader of a NATO member country asked him what he would do if that country didn't fulfill its financial obligations to the alliance. Trump said that he told this leader not only would the U.S. not protect such a country from Russian attack, but that he would encourage the Russians to, quote,
do whatever the hell they want.
The Republican rebuttal largely focused on the issue of immigration. Alabama Senator Katie Britt accused Biden of facilitating a crisis at the border.
Minutes after taking office, he suspended all deportations.
On the day he was inaugurated, Biden's acting Secretary of Homeland Security issued a memo ordering a broad review of immigration enforcement policy. It included a 100-day pause on certain deportations. But Britt's claim that all deportations were suspended is misleading. The memo specifically outlined several exceptions, including for threats to national security. For more fact-checking of the claims from the president's address and the Republican rebuttal, go to verifythis.com. With your Verify, I'm Casey Decker.
This is Jim at a party.
Dude, pass it. Hi there.
This is Jim making nachos.
Hi there.
This is Jim watching his favorite horror movie.
Oh, yeah, definitely hi there.
And this is Jim driving his car.
Dude, not hi there.
Jim's making good decisions and not getting behind the wheel when he's high. Because he knows that if you feel different, you drive different. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
A recent viral post with more than 35 million views claims the number of migrants trying to enter the U.S. illegally grew tenfold since 2017, citing U.S. Customs and Border Protection data. But is that statistic true? Let's verify. Our sources are U.S. Customs and Border Protection data, the Congressional Research Service, and two immigration policy experts. The viral claim uses real statistics from the CBP website, but it compares numbers from two different data sets to calculate the increase over a seven-year period, using Border Patrol encounters for 2017 and total enforcement actions for 2023. Aaron Recklin Melnick, policy director at the American Immigration Council, said this is like comparing apples to oranges. Border Patrol encounters are the number of apprehensions made by the agency. Total enforcement actions is a broader category that includes those encounters as well as CBP encounters with people known as inadmissibles. On top of that, both data sets also count more than just the number of people who are crossing the border illegally. So, what are the accurate numbers? Well, let's start with the CBP data on encounters. It shows that U.S. Border Patrol encounters increased from about 310,000 in 2017 to just over 2 million in 2023. That's about 665%, or a 6.6-fold increase. Now let's look at the data on total enforcement actions. In 2017, that number was about 527,000. That number rose to over 3.2 million in 2023. And that is a 608%, or 6.1-fold increase. While illegal immigration has grown considerably over the last 7 years, we can verify it has not grown tenfold since 2017. When using the appropriate data to compare, the actual number is closer to a six-fold increase. With your Verify, I'm Ariande Till.
This is Columbus Perspective on The Fan. Here's more from Face the State, courtesy of 10TV.
Today we're focusing on the race for the Republican nomination for U.S. Senate in Ohio. We've heard Secretary of State Frank LaRosa's positions on several of the big domestic policy issues. Now we turn to his stances on some of the key foreign policy issues. Mr. Secretary, first of all, let's talk about Russia.
Yeah.
We heard of the death, mysterious death of Russian opposition leader Alexei Navalny a couple weeks ago. The war in Ukraine is still going on. How dangerous is Russia in terms of our foreign policy?
No, Russia's dangerous, and it's not mysterious how Navalny died. Navalny died at the hands of Vladimir Putin, and we need to be clear that Putin is a bad actor and that he is someone who is causing instability around the world, no question about it.
So when you look at the war in Ukraine going on, huge debate right now about funding for Ukraine mm-hmm. and support for Ukraine. What needs to be done there? so that Russia doesn't win? And what should America's role be?
It's interesting. Of the three of us, there's a real spectrum on this. It seems like with Mr. Dolan, it's just continue throwing money at it, which is kind of the Biden approach that hasn't been working. With Moreno, it's, hey, wave the white flag, not our problem, let it burn, which is deeply irresponsible as well. What I've been clear about is, of course, we need to be focused on our own domestic security, including the border. That needs to be the laser focus right now. But there are also things the world's most exceptional nation can do to make sure that this comes to a prompt end. For example, the sanctions are not working the way that they're supposed to. There are Russian oligarchs that have bared no burden at all for the actions of their country. Making those sanctions work the way they're supposed to is important. There's also something that's near and dear to me. As an Army Green Beret, what we do is train foreign militaries. That's what we're specialized in. Right now, the only people training the Ukrainians are the British. We've got battalions of Green Berets at Fort Campbell and Fort Bragg. Why not have them in Poland or Romania or Hungary, very safe places where they can actually be training these Ukrainians, better equipping them to go into the fight? That doesn't cost much, but it would have a good strategic impact.
Should we continue to financially and militarily support Ukraine?
I think that the problem is there's not the accountability that there needs to be. And this is where it's shocking to me that Republicans in the House and the Senate have called for there to be an inspector general, for example. The Biden administration has resisted that. That's shocking to me. I think that there are some real problems that need to be exposed with the way that funding is working before we go forward with it. But we need to bring this conflict to a conclusion, and there needs to be a strategy to it. I don't see that with the Biden administration. It's that old thing of if you're holding a hammer, everything looks like a nail. To the Biden administration, everything can be solved by just dumping money on it, and it's not working in this case.
What role do you think the U.S. should continue to play in the conflict between Israel and Hamas in Gaza?
America is the undisputed leader in the world militarily, economically, and diplomatically. We have to accept that role. This sort of isolationist idea that we can pretend the rest of the world is going to go away is a foolish one. In fact, when we ignore the rest of the world, things get bloodier and costlier. It is American weakness that causes instability, not American strength, is another way to say that. This is where it was shocking to me that days after October 7th, and let's think about what happened on October 7th, more Jews were murdered that day than any day since the Holocaust, when Hamas, with Iran's backing, poured across the border into these kibbutzim, these little villages along the, and they murdered hundreds and hundreds of people brutally, including a place I visited just a year ago, a kibbutz called Kfar Azah, where 50 innocent children were brutally murdered. Mr. Moreno, just days after that, when we were both in a forum and he was asked, would you support more funding for Israel? He said, Israel doesn't need America's help. That's shocking to me. Of course, Israel needs America's help. For 76 years since the founding of the modern state of Israel, they have needed our help. And they also need America to not be in their way, which I believe the Biden administration is right now. Let me be clear. Hamas started this. Israel didn't start this, but they have every right to finish it, and that means that they have to be given the leeway to rid the Gaza Strip of Hamas. Only until that happens can they really bring this to a conclusion.
So what about the suffering of the innocent people there in Gaza who are caught in the middle of all this?
Well, listen, the people of Gaza also bear some responsibility for electing Hamas. 76% in that election that they elected Hamas to be their government and allowing that to continue, that preparations for that invasion happened right under their noses. But, of course, from a humanitarian standpoint, there need to be things that done. And Israel is in many cases doing those. This is why war is a terrible situation. And the only thing worse than a war is one that is drug out by half measures. They need to be able to get this done and get this done robustly and promptly. And, of course, abide by the Geneva Conventions and taking care of non-combatants and everything else. I can tell you from experience, it's very difficult in a place like Gaza to tell who are the combatants and who are the non-combatants. And so the Israeli military, the IDF that I have trained with as a member of the Green Berets, we trained with the IDF. They have a very difficult task in front of them, but they must be allowed to accomplish that task.
If you win the primary and the general election, you would obviously be a new senator.
Yeah.
What would your approach be in that first year as a new senator? Would you sit back and learn, or jump right in?
I jump right in. We've already got enough sort of showmen. We need some more statesmen. We need people that are going to roll up their sleeves and get things done. We're going to take back the Senate majority when I beat Sherrod Brown. And so one of the first priorities is getting a good conservative leader to be our majority leader in the Senate. And that's something I'm going to focus on. One of the other things we're going to focus on is making the Trump tax cut permanent. When a multi-billion dollar tax cut expires, it's a tax increase. We need to make that tax cut permanent, set to expire next year. One of the things I really want to focus on, of course, is border security. I believe that President Trump will be the man in the White House at that point, and I think he's going to have a focus on that, but he's going to need good allies in the Senate. And again, as somebody who served on the border, I will be a key ally for him on that. And then finally, reining in the bureaucratic state. There's a bill called the RAINS Act that I want to pass that will actually pull back the reins on the people that consider themselves a fourth branch of government that have gone way beyond what they're supposed to be doing.
Secretary LaRose, thank you so much for your time and best wishes in the coming weeks as we get closer to the primary election.
Thank you, Doug.
Again, that's Doug Petcash, courtesy of our sister station, WBNS 10 TV, from his Sunday morning public affairs program, Face the State. A new edition can be seen this morning at 11:30 on 10 TV. This has been Columbus Perspective, a weekly public affairs presentation of The Fan. Heard each Sunday morning at 6 on WBNS AM, that's 1460 ESPN Columbus, and Sunday morning at 7 on WBNS FM, Sports Radio 97.1, The Fan.